Welcome to the Mumbrella Cast, brought to you from the studios of CBS Interactive. I'm Tim Burrows. Joining me for one last time, Mumbrella Deputy Editor Camille Alicorn.
Hello.
And Scott Rohde of PR agency House Party.
Hi, Tim.
This week, it's the end of the line for men's magazine Ralph.
In New Zealand, Fairfax closes its weekly business title, The Independent.
News Limited promotes a digital bigwig.
In TV, will Sunrise EP Adam Boland finally call it a day?
Australia's Got Talent briefly knocks MasterChef off the number one spot.
7 News airs the dying moments of the murdered security guard.
And ANZ's dour bank manager Barbara, would she convince you to switch banks? Now, last Friday afternoon, ACP Magazines announced that the July edition of its Lads Mag Ralph would be its last after 13 years and would only exist online as a brand. Camille, I almost get the impression that the new epitaph for newspapers and magazines is now an online edition.
Is breathing new life into its new online brand. Look, I think it was inevitable. Consolidation in the industry was inevitable, especially when you have something like FHM and Ralph, both owned by ACP. Everyone's been saying that it's more a case of when it's going to happen as opposed to is it going to happen? And it finally has.
And it was always a small team for Ralph as well. I mean, that was always the thing that struck me. You look down that list of editorial staff and it was tiny. You'd see the editor appear in pretty much every single story, or Ralph does this, Ralph does that. There would be a photo of him. Did you ever used to pick up Ralph, Scott?
Funnily enough, no. Look, you know, this. I think in the 80s and late 80s, early 90s, there was a growth of the Lads Mags type thing. Obviously, in the UK, there's still a lot of them still running, like Loaded, that kind of stuff. But, you know, the audience is dwindling because people are getting the content that they're looking for online. So, well, I don't even know how long Ralph will survive online, to be honest.
And the other factor, of course, was the rise of the weekly Lads Mags as well.
Yeah, Zoo. And
which ACP also owns.
Yeah. Yes, and that was the thing. When ACP acquired EMAP, they acquired FHM.
Yep.
And they acquired Zoo. So, you know, from that point of view, it was... suddenly they had too many Lads.
It's funny because every time you walk into 7-Eleven, there's always that special copy of Zoo saying, you know, 1.95 only this week, and then you go in the next week and it's 1.95 only this week again. And
still, good effort by ACP to try and kill the news by announcing it last thing on a Friday afternoon.
The old classic.
It's always the best strategy. I mean, another reason that they attributed, I suppose, the consolidation to, if you may want to call it that way, is that the growth of the cross-category men's magazines.
Do you mean by that?
Well, something like a Top Gear or Men's Health, where you can't really class it as just, you know, cheap and quick and nasty Zoo type of magazine, or it's not just health.
Yes, I saw someone tweet, it's a very sad day when men don't want to look at surgically augmented DD breasts anymore, isn't it? Whereas they've now got these slightly greater taste to go for men's health and that sort of thing.
Actually, it's funny, have you ever seen the first maybe 40 episodes of FHM?
The first 40 episodes?
Yeah, first 40 editions. They all had men on the cover, because it was designed as a for him magazine.
Yes,
men on the cover.
FHM used to stand for, much like GQ used to stand for Gentleman's Quarterly.
Yeah, GQ's still kind of more upmarket men's magazine anyway.
It is. And that always had in the UK anyway, always had the sort of more camp following, because
yes.
it was occasionally known as gaily queerly.
Well, it was about being all smartly dressed, and you know, at that time, most men didn't really care about that.
I suppose so. Now, speaking of closures, this week we were also sort of told by Fairfax that it would close the doors of its weekly New Zealand business title, The Independent, just 4 years after acquiring it. Now, the announcement, which came in a story online from Fairfax, kind of buried it halfway down after describing a major expansion of business journalism and imprint. Now, Scott, first of all, wearing your, I suppose, PR hat, is that the way to announce these things?
No, very much not, because people will realise you're just trying to hide the fact that, you know, you're killing off one of your titles. I mean, when it boils down to it, that's what it is. They're killing off a title, but they're claiming it's an expansion. How can you do an expansion if you're killing off a title. It makes no sense whatsoever.
I suppose the sad thing about this as well is the ownership change, and they were all so enthusiastic 4 years ago when mm-hmm. they're talking about their
fresh
big plans
new owners,
for the title.
Yes, yeah.
And that's, I suppose, the, you know, a lot has happened since then. You know, the market has
changed dramatically.
You know, it has. If we think that there are problems in an advertising slowdown in Australia, that's nothing compared to New Zealand. So from that point of view. But yeah, one doesn't actually read any of that in the announcement, though.
No, which... not at all. And it's strange because they're saying that nobody will lose their jobs in this. But I wonder if there'll be redundancies maybe on the, you know, the old classic, oh, they were just going to retire anyway, you know, that kind of fading them out way rather than just announcing the sacking people type thing.
Camille, what do you make of it?
I think, well, it's just obvious. It's what's happening everywhere, isn't it? It's getting rid of titles, consolidating, you know, it's just the way of the world these days. And no, they shouldn't have put the spin in because any discerning journalist will know it's just spin. So it's ridiculous.
Yeah, and looking at the Twitter stream today, people, you know, as we're recording this, people were fairly sort of hostile to the way it was announced. Next, still in publishing, we discuss News Limited's latest plans.
A year after News Limited's group editorial director declared he was very uncomfortable with his journalists using Twitter, the company has appointed a senior member of staff whose duties will include developing the company's social media capabilities. Tim, News Limited has brought in Sigrid Kirk to the newly created role. Now, where has she come from and what else will she be working on?
Well, it's an internal promotion most recently. So previously she'd been News Digital Media's group publisher.
Right.
So she's coming into a role which sits, News Digital Media sits within News Limited. So that's the digital arm. I wonder whether it's another little clue that more and more they're bringing the two companies together and that they're going to just have to face the fact that all of the brands integrate together. We've already seen it with The Australian. We've seen Richard Freudenstein take the helm of both The Australian and stay in charge of News Digital Media as well.
Mm-hmm. But The Australian's a separate, they've spun that off as a separate kind of operation though. That's
well, they have, but he now has both. So whereas before he had News Digital, he's now got both print and online. Mm-hmm. So to me, this is another move slightly in that direction. But yes, and I wonder whether I'm being slightly disingenuous suggesting that News are getting serious about social media in that all of her job, the quote is she'll lead the development of all new digital products and applications by the company, work closely with the company's divisional management and individual mastheads. She'll also be responsible for developing search, social media and video capabilities for News Limited's online network. So that's a big role.
That's pretty massive. I love the bit later on in the story and you've got the quote from Campbell Reid where he said, "So I believe that journalists who work for us have news to tell and they should do so through the vehicles that are employed to supply material."
This was his comment
from a year ago.
About
when some of the guys were using Twitter. "We're very uncomfortable with staff tweeting in a professional sense, blah, blah, blah." But he says, "Like so many things that burn so brightly on the internet, we're watching to see how it goes. We don't want to spend a lot of time developing policies." It makes me think of MySpace and Murdoch's little investment into that and the difference that's happened with that. You know, it burned brightly and then it's kind of faded out these days.
Well, or I suppose arguably they certainly plunged in with both feet to the iPad and
yes.
You know, the iPad app, which actually I guess since we last chatted the data has come in on that, suggesting about sort of 4,500 people signing up in the last week or so.
Yeah.
Reckon
it's not bad. You know, that's really a small market.
Yeah.
We don't know how many iPads have been sold yet.
Next question is also the churn rate, you know.
Well, that's it, yeah. But I think, you know, I think sometimes it's better to jump in feet first than see what happens.
Okay, now we move on from publishing to TV.
In TV, Adam Boland, the executive producer who's been credited with taking Seven's breakfast show Sunrise to the top, could be leaving. In fact, I reckon it all will be clear by the time this podcast is actually being listened to. Camille?
Yeah, look, there's increasing speculation that he's not going to renew his contract when it expires later this year. And, you know, Adam Boland is Sunrise, so what's going to happen
you
if
like
he leaves?
You like him, don't you? You chatted to him on the phone
You told this to other people before.
A little crush there?
He's quite charismatic, as I said. He's a very
lively character. I remember talking about him before.
No, he's great. He's great.
He's got a tattoo with his name on it.
I mean, there was an article in The Oz today, actually, saying that one of the stories on Seven News that recently ran about the New South Wales minister, David Campbell, about his secret gay life, the expose on Seven News, There was talk that Boland didn't quite like that story. And
yes, the quote from The Australian said Boland has made it known at the network he was unhappy over Seven News had run the story. Mm. So they're suggesting that as one possible reason. The Telegraph is suggesting it could be more sort of family reasons. But it's just worth remembering what he's pulled off. So when he took over Sunrise, it was well behind Today, which had been on top for something like 20 years. Mm. He took Sunrise to number one in the morning slot. Then in the mid-morning slot, he launched The Morning Show, which overtook Kerri-Anne Kennelly, massively overtook and effectively killed Channel 10's offering with 9am with David and Kim.
Yeah.
So he's done an awful lot. The suggestion seems to be that his contract may run until November anyway, but you can see why Seven would make efforts to...
I mean, last year was the first time we started seeing Today Show hitting back. And actually rating, especially this year, having some days where it's rating ahead of Sunrise, especially strong in Melbourne. So absolutely the dominance, unquestionable, unwavering dominance of Sunrise is not really as strong as it used to be.
Yeah, I like the fact that, I mean, obviously the Australian story's got this insinuation that he's leaving because of what happened to David Campbell's secret. I really, if that's the reason he's quitting, then I admire him for it. If he's walking out because of what they did to David Campbell, then, you know, you've got to admit that's good of him.
I don't think that's the reason. I think it'd be an awesome reason.
Yeah. Yeah, I suppose one thinks if that was the reason, then you might expect it to happen immediately rather than working the notice. Anyway, still with TV ratings, Seven's Australia's Got Talent. We're reaching, well, we know who the winner is now. The grand finale was this week.
Well, we know that the top four, I think it was, so... Now, the audience has a week as we're recording this, to vote on who they want as the winner, which will be announced next Tuesday. So this was the second last episode this week.
And how were the ratings?
It was quite a good rating for it. It was the highest rating for the show, beating MasterChef.
Crazy world.
Unusually crazy world. So, yes, MasterChef. Pretty much you expect to do, at the moment, 1.8 or something like that.
Yeah, so that's pretty much what Australia's Got Talent received this week, whereas MasterChef was about closer to 1.7. Again, still not a tardy or low rating by any means. And so overall viewers, Australia's Got Talent, yes, but when you're looking at the, you know, advertiser-friendly demographics, still led by MasterChef, 16 to 39s, 18 to 49s, and 25 to 54s.
Now, still with Seven, I was moving house a couple of days ago, so I was actually at home watching telly, which I'm not usually at 6 o'clock in the evening, tuned into the Seven News to see news of the tragic shooting of the security guard in Sydney. But the shocking thing, well, to me anyway as a viewer, was the footage of the guard's dying moments, the ambulance staff in the back of the ambulance attempting to give... resuscitation, heart massage, which seemed to me not the sort of thing you would necessarily normally expect.
So when
we made inquiries the next day, at the time there were only, I think, two viewer complaints had been made to the channel, but there was a lot of debate on Mumbrella afterwards after we reported on the issue. Camille, did the sort of comment stream go as you expected?
I suppose initially, us actually posting this story initiated the conversation or the debate that you're just being hypocritical by actually posting the story with the video on it.
Because we put the YouTube video of the clip of what Seven had shown. Mm. Yeah, which I guess I'd make the argument, well, once it's out there, it is out there.
Yeah, and I suppose also, and this is what the comment stream inevitably turned to, and thank you for some discerning posters out there who read Mumbrella, is that you can't compare something like Mumbrella to Channel 7 News, where there are kids watching at prime time, to Mumbrella, where there's not going to be any kids reading Mumbrella, are there? And you also...
It's very juvenile, people.
Yeah, it's very, yeah, no.
Really. I mean, and also, I suppose the main thing as well is, you know, it's a forum for discussion, which is what Mumbrella is, whereas 7 News is... It's a news story,
but in the main, I mean, let's get back to the main point though. Scott, what would your call be as a news director if you have that very dramatic footage, which does?
Oh, it captures a moment, but yes. You can't show. I don't believe you should ever show the dying moments of anybody. you know, that as we saw that, you know, his wife's making it, made this appeal. She was in tears through the whole news broadcast for it. And, you know, you're affecting people's lives with that. You know, do you honestly think that, how would you feel if, like, you turned on the TV and you saw your mother or something like that being given resuscitation and you know the outcome of it? How would you feel? I mean, journalists have this, you know, I suppose it's one of the differences between print and TV journalists. You know, we have this ethics code that we're meant to stand by, and we're meant to still be able to give the news to people, but you don't have to show them those kind of graphic images where you are upsetting people's lives. And I think that's the true moment of it. That what you did there was you affected a whole bunch of people by showing that, and I don't think that's right.
One thing that gives me the impression that maybe others took a different view is my understanding is that Sky News, because it's jointly owned by Seven and Nine as well as News Corp, is that they have access to Seven footage.
Yeah.
Now, all of the news coverage I saw on Sky News, they didn't use that footage, which suggests that others were making the choice not to air it. So there was a judgment call.
I think it's a judgment call, and I think that the correct judgment was not to use it.
Well, let me ask you this, and then
it's similar to war footage. Yes.
This is the question I want to ask, and I'll ask Camille as well. But you first got, is it exactly that? What you do see, though, is you see graphic things happening. You know, there was that the much talked about moment in the Iranian Revolution where we saw the protesters' dying moments, which had been uploaded to YouTube and made the news, or even footage of victims of famine, for instance, which can move people. Now, what is it about distance?
I don't think it's a distance thing. I think it's the fact of the message you're trying to get across. On this story, it was the fact that one man was shot dead in an armed robbery. And they use footage of the man, of them trying to keep him alive. That's different from, say, a situation where you're trying to get across the horrors of war. You know, you're not getting across the horrors of anything here except the fact that a man doing his job was shot. That's totally different from the horrors of war incidents where you've got, you know, a bomb going off and you can witness the bomb and things like that.
Camille, why is it okay for African famines and not when it's closer to home?
I think just in this instance, you have to ask, is this in the public interest? I would say no, it's an isolated event. It's been a sad occurrence that this man died on something like wars that and famines that affect the world and countries. I think maybe we need to see those visions and footage to actually form a view as to how these things are going to eventually affect us as a country.
This is just a robbery.
Are you saying that Seven, what's your position on Seven though?
I went up and looked up the code of practice for commercial TV, and there's absolutely nothing there that says this is wrong. There are a couple of little points for current affairs and news programs where in the code it says current affairs and news programs are presented with care, having regard to the likely composition of the viewing audience, and in particular, the presence of children. They should have appropriate regard to the feelings of relatives and viewers when including images of dead and seriously wounded people. Now, obviously, any network's going to interpret that any way they want to. But for me, that was basically, you should have adhered to that from my point of view.
Next, we'll be hearing about a familiar banking experience.
You might remember me.
No, darling.
You said I should open this everyday account because it had no monthly account fees.
No need to thank me.
I'm not. Look at all these.
Ah, yeah. You see, when I said no monthly account fees, it was no with a silent K, as in you may not know about the fees until the fees are charged. Your mistake.
That hardly seems fair.
That's what you signed up for.
If I had realised about these fees, I never would have opened it to begin with.
Not my problem.
Barbara lives in Bank World, but we live in your world.
Welcome to ANZ.
Where, with an ANZ Access Advantage account, what you see is what you get.
In a recent guest post, Tactical TV's Tony Richardson wrote about his love for Barbara, the sour and unhelpful bank manager in ANZ's latest ads. Barbara's supposed to represent the terrible service that many people suffer from at the hands of their banks. Richardson says the ad is effective because what ANZ has done is it's been honest about what Australians feel about all banks. And ANZ says that it's done something about it, and it's in the ad it claims to have the most satisfied customers out of the big four banks. But was anyone else convinced?
No.
No. Scott, Tim?
I think everybody's opinion the big four are pretty much the same, to be perfectly honest. You know, I've got my bank accounts with a few of them, and I don't really notice any difference between any of the bank tellers, to be perfectly honest.
Now, I speak as someone who I mentioned a few minutes ago took a couple of days off to move house recently, which also gave me the chance to experience some ANZ customer care this week, actually, as I popped into town.
Who was it, Tim? Who was it?
Well, I had time to check in on Foursquare, which obviously one always does if one is a douche.
which you're a massive one.
But and also the chance to post some advice, because you can obviously post tips, of which my piece of advice was...
go to Commonwealth?
Well, no, it was if patience is a virtue, then ANZ is a very quick route to sainthood. I was in there for a very long time.
How long were you there, Tim?
Minutes, but I'm very impatient. But yes, it's the sitting around while you watch four tellers doing absolutely nothing while one person staffs a desk where you can actually get the help and there's a huge queue waiting for them. Yeah. So,
look, when I see that those adverts, I just think, she must work for ANZ, you know.
But that's by the by, because this is the problem, isn't it? For the agency, their job is to market ANZ. Yep. They actually don't speak for ANZ. They represent the brand as it is.
And I really like the creative, to be honest with you. I thought it's quite a funny ad. Whether it's, in line with what ANZ actually is and what service it does offer, I think that's where the disconnect comes in. So that's why I don't
know. Are you saying an ad could lie?
Yeah, what you did flag up, though, was there are similarities to other pieces of advertising.
Yeah, in the UK, Nationwide Building Society has been running quite similar ads with a male banker.
Well, let's take a listen to that.
Mm. Right, well, that's your mortgage sorted.
We were just wondering what this £2,000 charge was.
That's the HLC.
What does that stand for?
Well, what do you think it stands for, eh?
Handful of loose change.
Have a look at my computer. Oh, eyes right. Hideous lady's cardigan.
Hairy little cat.
Meow. Can you just tell us what it is?
All right, it's the higher lending charge. You have to pay it if you've got a small deposit.
£2,000. Yeah. I think you'll find that we're hastily leaving...
Customers!
Have a leaflet, Colin.
My name's Malcolm.
He looks cross.
At Nationwide, we don't make you pay a higher lending charge, however small your deposit. Nationwide, no shareholders, just our customers. Proud to be different.
So that's what goes on in other parts of the world. But I got the sense from the conversation stream in the guest posting from Tony that people broadly were positive about the advertising.
I didn't get that at all, actually. Wow. Rereading the same stream. People were saying... I think what I got was that the creative was fine or was very good, but ANZ's a bit crap.
Yeah, but that's exactly it, isn't it?
But it's not going to convince them. But it's not going to convince people to go to ANZ if they've already had a bad experience with them. So the ad's not going to change anything.
And an ad designed to work. If it doesn't work, then...
Now, I sometimes wonder, though, with this sort of advertising, whether one of the things that a bank has to do when they've got to move the staff is... One of the audiences they're trying to influence with that sort of ad is the staff. One of the ways you get staff to change their behaviour is by making it clear what expectations should be about them.
Yeah, they should probably do more internal videos like the banana Westpac video. That would be great.
That went well, didn't it?
Yeah, it'll change things for them.
Yeah, Scott, you were looking a bit unconvinced at my argument there.
Yeah, I was completely. Do you honestly think that was in the brief? No.
Well, that is nearly it for now, for today. It just remains to say thank you very much to Camille, who, after many, many successful podcasts, is moving on, not just from the podcast, but from Mumbrella. What are you doing, Camille?
I'm joining Launch Management Group. It's a full-service comms agency. I'll be joining as a PR consultant for a couple of clients. I can't say too much at the moment, but one is an alcohol body. Bit of government lobbying. And
would you like to loan off my PR hat then?
Since
you're hanging up your journalist hat.
I'll leave that to you, Scott, to tell everyone every time you're on the podcast. And my other client is an online financial brand, so it should be very interesting.
So, Scott, any advice to Camille on making those first steps from journalist
please,
to PR?
Please. Oh, Scott's God. Always full of advice.
So many.
How did you
of
find
advice.
It? But that time, you when you first made the transition from journalist to PR,
I didn't really find it that difficult at all. I'm not sure how Camilla will be able to handle it, but I think that, you know,
come back with a tail to my legs.
Yeah, she'll be back in journalism in 6 months. It depends, you know. It can be a very similar world. If you'll be dealing with journalists a lot of the time, and you know how you handle them because you wear one. So it's one of those things. You just take your time. And
how do you feel about being nice to journalists who don't deserve it?
It should be very interesting, actually. I've found as a journalist, ex-journos who are in PR are sometimes the harder to deal with because they always think, oh, well, I used to be a journalist, and they often tell me this. They're the ones who I find very difficult to deal with. I'll see how I deal with them. I'm getting paid to, so, you know, I deal with people that I don't like all every day.
Like 10.
And I get paid, so, you know, I can deal with that.
Well, we wish you the best of luck, Kamel.
We do indeed. Scott.
And we look forward to having you as an occasional guest on the podcast in the future, I hope.
I hope so.
Well, that is it for now. Thank you very much for one final time to Kamel Alarcón, and good luck.
Adios.
Best luck.
Thank you.
And to Scott Rohde and to CBS Interactive for use of their studio. Production was by Georgina Pearson. That was the Mumbrella Cast. I'm Tim Burrows. Toodle-pip.